The Harry Brown Show is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
Conversation. And to give you a little background on my guest, Jim Babka, he was the press secretary of my 2000 campaign and did a fabulous job. We got enormous coverage on Fox News and even on CNN and some other of the networks. And we, of course, did not have the money for widespread advertising, but we did manage to make up partially for it in publicity. And Jim Babka was largely responsible for that. And after the campaign was over, Perry Willis and I started a foundation. And I did not have the time to devote a lot of active involvement in it because I had to get back to making a living. And Perry took the lead in it. But Perry had been working for the LP for many years and had been a libertarian activist since the day he turned adult, which was well over 10 years, and eventually he just could not handle it anymore. He was just burned out. And in the meantime, Jim Babka had come aboard, and Jim took over the reins as president, and he has done a fabulous job since then. It's been, I'm not sure how long, maybe 3-4 years, and eventually we changed the name from the American Liberty Foundation to Downsize DC as being more representative of what we were actually trying to do. And Jim has innovated a number of things, which he will talk about tonight, I hope, and brought Downsize DC into the mainstream of internet email organizations and taken advantage of all the latest technological developments. So it's my pleasure to introduce Jim Babka. Good evening, Jim.
Good evening, Harry. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. First of all, let's talk about these technological innovations that you've done, and then we'll talk about what you're using them for. And you might start with the Move On example.
Well, MoveOn.org was an organization that a lot of people have heard of, and in fact, they seemed to be everywhere last year during the presidential election. What we did with MoveOn.org to kind of mirror what they've done, they started out in 1998 or so, 97, defending the president, Clinton, because he was being, you know, facing potential impeachment charges, and they came up with the slogan, you know, censure and move on, and that was where they got their name from. Well, they started with an email to 100 people, all people who were in the high-tech industry, and those people passed on the email to their friends, and they passed on that to their friends, and so on and so on. And that's called viral marketing, by the way. It's contagious. It kind of spreads almost like a disease would.
But what do you call that?
Viral marketing. And they used this to get to the point where they got lots of people involved in what they were doing, and then it became a national movement. And a few years, by the time they came, that was like 98, that they, late 98 that they started, by the time they came around to the 2004 elections, they were a very big player in late 2003 in making Howard Dean the front runner. A lot of the people that were involved in Move On had decided they wanted to support Howard Dean, and they were very involved in Democratic politics the year that followed. They had 2.2 million people on their email list, and that's just from late 1998 with 100 people, they got to the point where they had over 2 million. And so the key tactic that they used, Harry, to do this was they set up a mechanism that allowed people to register with them, give them their name, their address, and phone number, and zip code, and so forth. And the system would then tell them who their representative and two senators were, and then they could send a message off to Washington. Now, they did several other things, too, but this was the key strategy that allowed them to do a lot of magnetic marketing to their website and to get to the point where they had 2 million people. And that, of course, attracted the attention then of some very large donors. And so down the road, we're looking at being able to do the same thing. DownsizedDC.org has a proprietary system that we've put in place, very similar to what MoveOn.org did, that allows someone to come to the site, provide that same information, and then find out who the representative and senators are and send a customized message on the issues that we're posting, obviously all of which have to do with making government smaller.
Yeah. All they have to do is enter their zip code, right? And they've got an email message right there already addressed?
Yeah, they actually have to put in their full contact information. And the reason that we have them do that is that the message is counted in the congressional office. It's actually worth something. It actually has weight with the congressional office. If they know for sure that they're hearing from a constituent, if they're not hearing from a constituent, they know that they don't have to take the message seriously and they discard it. What we've come to learn after getting, doing this process and visiting Capitol Hill and talking to people who work there is that most congressional offices, the office holder himself or herself, receives a report every morning telling them what they're getting messages out about and how many messages they're getting. And they discuss how they're going to respond to those messages, most of the time with form letters, because they're literally getting millions of communications every year up there, about 5 million. So they take that... they take that report every morning, and they can see where their constituents stand and what they're interested in and what they're talking about, what they need to be paying attention to. And what we're trying to do is marshal as many people as possible. The key to our strategy is to have as many people using it as possible. So right now we have 21,000 people on our email list. We have over 9,500 that have registered to use the system. And that number's going up every day. And we've generated over 250,000 messages to Congress so far.
4 million?
A quarter million. 250,000.
Oh, quarter million. Sorry. Even that's staggering.
Yes. And so we're well on our way to getting a lot to making our voice heard. And Congress with this, we're going to talk a little bit about our signature piece of legislation, I know.
Mm-hmm.
But they are beginning to respond to us by name in some cases.
In other words, they know who's generating this?
They know who's generating the messages. That's exactly right. We've seen letters from congressional offices where they say, well, this is a proposal of Downsize DC, and then they go on to talk about it. So we are beginning to have an impact. We were told something really significant, Harry, by a couple of different people. And quite frankly, I didn't believe it when I first heard it. But these people told us that somewhere between 15 and 30 messages on a single issue to a congressional office will cause them to begin paying attention. And they will generate a form response to that issue, but they will begin counting it. They'll begin paying attention to it. One letter, two letters, they're probably not paying attention. But 15 to 30, they will. And that seemed like a really small number to me. I don't know if it sounds like that to you, but
it's taken as a representative of a much bigger sampling, of course, that this is just the people who took the trouble to write.
Right, and what we found is that's true. We now, on our signature piece of legislation, we've had more than a dozen congressional offices that have now responded to us, and that's almost right in line with the 15 to 30. We're right in that range right now of 15 to 30 messages per office. We're closer to the 15, actually. But we're starting to get to that point, so we're starting to see them respond, and that turns out that number really is accurate. So that means in those offices that have already generated that form letter, every time they're hearing from us on that issue, they're counting. They're putting a little slash there, and every morning they're telling their boss, we got 5, we got 10, we got 60 more letters last night.
Wow. That really is impressive. All right. Now, the next question is, what are you using it for? And when we come back from this break, we want to talk about your signature piece of legislation. And we'll do that with Jim Babka, and if you have questions for him, just call 1-800-259-9231 or email me, question@harrybrown.org. We'll be right back.
This is Harry Brown. My book, Why Government Doesn't Work, provides libertarian solutions to many of today's thorny political problems. How to make America much safer from foreign attack while reducing the military budget dramatically. How to end the Social Security program and free us from that oppressive tax without leaving senior citizens holding the bag. How to reduce crime while reducing government. How to end the income tax immediately and cut the federal budget by over 90%. How a libertarian president could reduce government even without a libertarian Congress. Why Government Doesn't Work is now available for downloading at libertyfree.com for only $9.75. Just $9.75 for Why Government Doesn't Work. You can read the book on your computer screen or print it out and read it from your easy chair. You can get Why Government Doesn't Work tonight at libertyfree.com.
The Harry Brown Show is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
This is Harry Brown. My guest tonight is Jim Babka of Downsize DC, and we've been talking about this terrific mail system that Downsize DC has set up. It's taken you a year or more to get this thing in place, and it really is working well. And now, what is the signature piece of legislation that you're using it for? And I don't think this is going to be a surprise to too many listeners.
The Read the Bills Act. We actually believe that Congress should have to read the laws that they pass.
You mean actually know what it is they're voting on?
We're not even asking for that much, although we should be. Yeah, many of the people who are in Congress, Harry, are attorneys. They know what a power of attorney responsibility is. When you take on the responsibility of power of attorney, you are actually taking on the responsibility to not only read, but be familiar and understand everything that you're signing onto when you sign a document on behalf of someone else. If you fail in that responsibility and you happen to be a member of the bar, you could be disbarred for not carrying out that responsibility. But when they get to Congress, you know, Congress has this habit of exempting themselves from things, and they pass massive pieces of legislation without having even taken a look at it. The Patriot example is an example. The Patriot Act was passed, and the actual final printed version of the bill was available about 2 weeks after the vote was taken. Last year, roughly this time, Congress was reorganizing intelligence. You remember the debate over the intelligence czar. $14 billion in new spending, over 3,500 pages worth of the bill. The final copy of the bill, only two were printed 2 hours before the vote, one for the Republican leadership, the other for the Democrat leadership.
And each of those read the 3,500 pages?
Yeah, apparently we're supposed to believe that they were all sitting around, they had all taken Evelyn Wood speed reader courses, and they all read over each other's shoulder.
200 congressmen reading over what's his name shoulder? Who is it? Denny Hastert.
Denny Hastert. Yes.
I'm sorry, but I just have this picture in my mind of all these guys crowding each other, trying to get a good look at the bill.
Well, they say that they have aides that do the reading for them, that tell them what's in the bills and what they're supposed to vote for. But the real problem with this was illustrated late last year when the omnibus budget bill was passed. And the omnibus budget bill is huge, huge. It's the entire federal budget. It's the final vote on everything that they're going to spend money on. But even when they're at the point where they're getting ready for their final vote, and they're in conference committee, staffers will sneak things in. And last year, one of the things that got snuck in was that the Appropriations Committee chairman and ranking members of both the House and the Senate were given a line in the bill that said that they had the right to walk over to the IRS and read Harry Brown's or any one of your listeners' income tax returns, going back several years. And when it came out that this was in there, Tim Russert asked Bill Frist, how did this get in here? And the Senate Majority Leader said, I don't know how it got in there. But his staff then pointed the fingers at Representative Istook of Oklahoma, who they believed was responsible for it. And he said, I don't know how it got in there. I didn't put it in there. And here are some staffer, we were supposed to believe apparently that maybe a mouse crawled into the room, got up, wrote it on the page, and nobody in Congress had any idea how it happened. But this kind of stuff goes on all the time. This is not the exception. This is the rule that they'll cram last-minute bits of pork into a bill or last-minute set-asides or last-minute special rules that were not considered by the entire body. And, of course, it's a big, huge bill. Nobody has time to read it, consider it, say, whoa, hold the phone. Why is this in here? And then 6 months or a year later, some think tank will issue some comical study saying that there was, heavens, we didn't realize there was a cow flatulence study in here that, Congress Max got snuck in there. So we believe a Read the Bills Act would help deal with that, because they would have to read it before they could cast an affirmative vote.
Well, that certainly would cast responsibility on every single congressman and senator then, because he would then never be able to disclaim ignorance, which, of course, is no excuse to a common citizen.
Yeah, and we say that in a radio ad that we've got on the subject here. We say that ignorance is no excuse, even for a congressman.
Although it is understandable.
Yes. And, you know, and Harry, this gets back to something that you talked about during your presidential campaign. The job is too big. They're doing too many things. And because they're doing so many things, they can't possibly keep up with all of it. And, you know, when we went to Washington here recently, we sat, one of the meetings we sat in with a staffer for a senator down in Florida was lamenting the fact that, you know, right now with this hurricane disaster relief, you know, the post-effects of what happened in New Orleans, that they were just rushing to do something, to do anything. Exactly. And because they were rushing to do anything, that's literally what they were doing, and things are going to get thrown in, and things are going to happen, and they're going to keep spending money and spending money to show that they're doing something. And, one of the provisions we have in this bill is a 7-day waiting period, where the bill would have to be, first of all, it has to be read, and we'll talk about the reading, I hope, more as we go, because that's the key component, in my opinion. But the 7-day waiting period means that after the final version of the bill is printed and done, and has been read, when they read the last word, the clock starts. They cannot cast a vote for it for 7 days, and during those 7 days it has to be posted on the internet, available for the public to see. Well, how many of these things could they sneak in? How much, you know, lack of fiscal restraint would they have in a situation like this if everybody was able to see how the sausage was made?
Yeah, that'd be wonderful. I have on the show referred over the years several times to that Red River bill, when the Red River overflowed its banks back in the late 90s, and they passed a bill to replenish FEMA because it was out of money in order to be able to take care of the victims of the Red River in North Dakota and Minnesota. And there was, you know, really dozens and dozens and dozens of provisions in there, like a library in Arkansas and money for representatives, widow in Texas, and on and on and on, and not one dime went to the victims of the Red River flood.
Well, you know, and you did a recording for us, if you recall, back when we were the American Liberty Foundation, part of a package, How Government Works, and you talked about this bill. It was the centerpiece of that presentation.
Oh, yeah.
And it just built up. I remember how you just kept talking about all the different things that were in there, and at the very end of the bill, you had never mentioned flood relief for these victims there in Red River, so... And this is a typical congressional tactic. And this Senate staffer, Harry, was lamenting to us that there were no brakes. These guys were a bunch of children, and the car was running downhill. The brakes are gone. I'm mixing my metaphors here, but they had no way to stop. They had no way to stop themselves. And he was almost desperate. Someone stop us, please. He wasn't sure that our proposal was the way to do it, but he did recognize that there were no restraints, and they needed them.
Yeah, that 7-day waiting period is really important, too, because, as you say, now the public can see it. And even if not many people in the public see it, the representatives know that it is there and exposed. And if they vote for something that's really obscene, they could be called on it. And that they might have the wrath of God come down on them from people who have actually read the bill and know what it is.
Yeah, we're hoping with that 7-day waiting period that radio talk show hosts like you and others and watchdog groups in the media and so forth will report on what's in the bill.
We'll pick up on various things. We'll be right back, folks. You give us a call if you want to ask Jim a question, 1-800-259-9231. Or question@harrybrown.org is the email address. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
You're listening to The Harry Brown Show on the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
my guest, Jim Back of Downsize DC. Jim, before we forget it, how about an address and a phone number and anything else you can tell us about how to contact you?
Well, the main way to contact us is through downsizedc.org, and that's actually the name of the organization we've been talking about tonight, downsizedc.org. You should tell your friends. When you come to downsizedc.org, you can, for the very first time, you register, and the system tells you who your representative and two senators are, and then allows you to send messages, personalized messages. We just provide the first sentence or two, usually, to kind of get the message rolling. And we do that so no one else can hijack our systems for our system for some other purpose. We're focused on making government smaller. That's what we mean by Downsize DC, and again, it's downsizedc.org.
Terrific. And that'll be up on the Radio Links page also. Now, earlier you mentioned that there was more to the Read the Bills Act that you wanted to get into. What is that?
Well, you know, part of the reading that we're actually requiring them to go through is that they actually have to sit through a reading. Now, there's two ways that they can do this. They can either, first of all, the House and the Senate have to assemble a quorum, and a quorum, as they define it, is 50% plus one. So half of the congressional members of Congress have to sit through a reading of the bill, a physical reading of the bill. The clerk stands up and reads the whole thing from the very first word all the way to the last word. So these bills that are really, really, really large, we believe that automatically, very quickly, they're not going to want to sit through these long readings, and they're going to want to reduce the size of the bills. So we believe they're going to reduce the size of the bills and get, you know, have fewer earmarks and pork and so forth and the various things they're doing. They're going to make the bills tremendously smaller.
And break them up into small bills that really pertain to what the title is.
Right. And the second thing, the second part of that is that for those that weren't present, if they want to cast an affirmative vote and they didn't sit through the actual reading, they have to sign an affidavit. An affidavit is a sworn statement that you are actually telling the truth. You're committing a crime if you're lying, and they have to sign a sworn statement that before I cast my yes vote, I have read the entire contents of this bill. And so we've got this requirement there on them. Now, this holds them accountable with their constituents back home. They can't claim ignorance. Ignorance is no longer even an excuse. I didn't know it was in there. You know, Representative Istook, Senator Frist, we talked about in the previous segment. They can't say, I didn't know it was in there, because they were responsible for reading the entire bill if they were casting a yes vote.
And if they signed an affidavit saying they read it and now claim they didn't, they're admitting to a crime.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a really good provision. Now, you've used this already before you got to the Read the Bills Act to try to put a brake on some of the things that were going through. What were those?
I'm not sure I understand the question, Harry.
Oh, before you got to Read the Bills Act, you used this, you tried it out on some other bills that were up before Congress to try to stop them. You asked people to write and tell them to vote no on certain things.
Yeah, well, when there's been an opportunity to point out that either Congress is rushing something out, you know, they're going to spring, and they just did it this past week, they're going to spring a vote on people that nobody's expecting. All the troops have kind of left the field, and they're going to throw something out at the last minute. And this is a favored tactic. When they decide they're going to do something like that, we point out that if the Read the Bills Act was there, this couldn't or wouldn't have happened. You would have had advance warning that this vote was coming. You would have known that it was going to occur. When they try to pass a bill that is multiple thousand pages long, and you know, it's clear that they've been debating it, and then all of a sudden they're going to vote on it, you know, we again say, you know, look, there's been amendments made and so forth. This wouldn't have happened. You would have known what was in that bill, and they would have known what was in that bill if they would have had to read the bills first. And obviously, the thing that we're really after, Harry, the big, big thing, is if they have to do these physical readings, it's going to take a lot of time. If the clerk's going to stand up and read the entire contents of the bill, that's going to slow the machinery way down. We're sticking putting a stick in there and kind of, you know, botching up the work so they can't get as much done as they get done. They pass things really fast once they get rolling. And so we're slowing the whole thing down, which means they're not going to be able to pass as much. We've included a final provision in this bill, which is a sunset provision. And that means that any bill that any program that is set to sunset, it's going to end at a date certain. When they go to reauthorize the new this program to keep it going, that they have to go through this read the bills procedure just as if they were bringing it up to the floor for the very first time.
Even if it's an exact duplicate of the original.
Right, and so as you were asking me, you know, how would we apply this to bills that are going on right now? Well, the Patriot Act's been considered over the summer, and the Patriot Act is a very, very large bill, and it was up for a good chunk of it was up for reauthorization. It had been set to sunset in December, and so they would have had to read the entire contents of that bill. I'm certain they would have found things to cut out of that bill rather than trying to pass them and even add a couple more new ones.
Yeah, I think so also. And what is the status of that now?
It has passed one branch of Congress, and I get this confused. There was another bill that I get this confused with, but I believe it has passed the House and not the Senate. They're putting the final touches on that, but please don't quote me on that. That could have changed in the last 30 days.
Okay. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, folks, so don't go away. Jim Babka is my guest. DownsizeDC.org is the name of the organization and also its email address. So don't go away. We'll be back very soon.
If you produce computer storage media, you need GlideRite test heads. GlideRite is a major supplier of test heads to most media manufacturers in the U.S. and Asia. In addition, GlideRite produces glide heads, burnish heads, certifier heads, and thermal asperity heads, focusing on meeting your specific needs with short turnaround times and optimum quality, all at a competitive price. GlideRite's delivery performance is unmatched, whether quantities are large or small. GlideRite has manufacturing facilities in Milpitas, California, and Ho Chi Minh, Vietnam. Each site is equipped with state-of-the-art tooling and computerized equipment. GlideRite's services include research and development, new design and technology, and engineering support. Whether you need standard heads or customized solutions, GlideRite is your expert source. So when designing hard disks, always specify GlideRite.
My guest is Jim Babka of Downsize DC, and we have a call from Eugene in Ohio. Good evening, Eugene. We just have a few minutes in this very short segment, so we may have to keep you over the news, but let's get you started. What's up?
Well, I'd like to express my concern about Read the Bill Act is that if we do that, they might start passing very broad general bills like bad drugs will be illegal. The Drug Enforcement Agency will have authority to declare which drugs are bad, which should be illegal, and how what punishment should be done. I can hang up, and you can comment on my concerns.
All right. Thank you for the question. It's a very perceptive question.
It is a very perceptive question. The one thing that I tell people when I talk to them about the Read the Bills Act is not to get their hopes up and think that this is the be-all and end-all. We see this as a very important first step in getting government under control. This bill is not perfect. In fact, we've tried to, the reason it's 6 pages long instead of one, because it doesn't take very long to explain what we're attempting to do, is we are attempting to think of all the different ways that Congress can get around the bill. That is an issue, and further steps are going to be required. But here's the thing, Harry. DownsizeDC.org currently has 21,000 people on its email list and 9,500 people who sent messages to Congress. We are not going to get the Read the Bills Act passed with that smaller group of people. And if we were to get it passed, we wouldn't be able to keep it in force. They would still find ways to try to cheat it and rig it and play different things that we haven't even thought of. That's what lawyers do. So what we believe that has to happen here is that we have to become so big and so large that they can't ignore ignore us, and that they're forced to comment on this issue, go public on this issue, and that's going to mean that they're going to be forced to consider this issue, and they're going to be forced to vote for it, because they're not going to want to tell their constituents they're not reading the bill. If we become that big, and this issue we hope is something that helps us become that big, then we will be able to take other steps to address problems like the one that Eugene addressed. And I don't know specifically what form that will take, but there's a number of different things that we're thinking about doing. You know, for example, Congress right now gets very up in arms when there's a scandal with like WorldCom or Martha Stewart or some other financial scandal in the corporate community. But they routinely do the same thing up on Capitol Hill. When the prescription drug bill was brought up before Congress, $400 billion was the testimony from an employee of the federal government. That was going to be the cost, $400 billion over 10 years. Well, the problem with that is, as he was sitting there, he knew that revised figures just earlier the week before had been put out, but he was told not to bring those figures. And those figures were $550 billion. And now we're being told that it's probably going to exceed $600 billion over 10 years, maybe even approaching $700 billion. $150 billion, $300 billion, pretty soon you've got real money. These dwarf all the other corporate scandals combined, and we think there should be some requirement, some bill that would put some kind of sanction on people who behave that way in the federal government. So there's a number of different things that need to be done. Read the bills is just a first step.
Okay, that's a good point. Jim, can you stay over and be with us after the news?
I would be glad to.
Okay, and we will be back after the news, folks, so don't go away. Listen to the news. You get to hear what the president said in his broadcast and all kinds of good news about Iraq, I trust. But do come back. This is Harry Brown. Don't go away.